Hello everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Mira, and I will be your host for today's show. With me for today is a very special guest, and it is Dr. William Cohen, the author of the upcoming Lid Publishing book, Peter Drucker on Consulting. How are you today, Bill?
I'm in great shape, thank you. I think I am anyway.
Fantastic. It's great to have you on the show. And for the benefit of our audience, Bill was the first graduate of the doctoral program that Peter Drucker co-founded. What Peter taught Bill has changed his life, and shortly after graduating, he was recommissioned in the Air Force and rose to the rank of Major General. Eventually, he became a full-fledged professor, a management consultant, and the author of more than 50 books, while maintaining a nearly lifelong friendship with his former professor. In 2009, he was named a distinguished alumni by the Drucker School, Claremont Graduate University, and 2 years later, he co-founded the non-profit California Institute of Advanced Management. How amazing is that, Bill?
Well, it makes me feel my age, very old. Yeah, that it's when I hear something like that, I think, man, this guy is really an old guy.
No, absolutely not. And these are some amazing achievements. And it makes me all the more interested in getting into today's podcast and cracking on with these questions, if we may.
Please.
Okay, well, I mean, my...
I'm having a sec. It's morning here in California where I'm doing this, and I have not had my second cup of coffee yet. So
yeah, we're here at the at about 5 o'clock mark in London, so we're kind of winding down as you guys are rising up. So, but I will try. I have my cup of coffee right next to me here, so okay. I will be awake. I will try very hard. I think it's my third for today as well, but. My first question for you, Bill, is actually a bit more of a general one, but a really kind of a personal question for me is, what were the key factors in Drucker becoming such a venerated business analyst? Was he born with the genius, or did he somehow learn it or earn it, perhaps?
Well, I thought about that and looked and analyzed it myself, and my conclusions finally were that it was a little bit of both, of that he was a unique genius. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I think that the extent of his genius and his friendliness, too, by the way, was astounding, especially in the combination of one person. He was a very, very smart guy. But also, he really, as I looked at his history and learned more about it myself after he passed away, and I started to realizing the lessons that he had taught me and the things that he had given me, which really caused me to really great to have a model become a success or whatever success I've had since I graduated from his program, was that he himself spent an enormous amount of time in really preparing himself for what he did as a consultant and for what he did as a as a management consultant. That is, he did an extensive amount of reading as he was growing, and all the way through his life. His wife Doris and I became friends while he was alive, and especially after his death. But he did an enormous amount of reading, and he took charge of his own education. I mean, his education included a lot of practical work, and he did that on his own decision. His parents wanted him to immediately go to college. He elected instead to get an apprenticeship as a job and started this extensive reading of all types at that time. And then as well went and got a degree in law and went on further from that to eventually get a doctorate degree. But he took charge of his own education. That was really impressive because I've run into a lot of people over the years, in both in the military and in civilian life, that they feel, well, when it's time for me to get the education I need, they will make the decision and they will send me to get a seminar or a course or whatever it happens to be. But Drucker really took charge himself, and I think that and his reading and his natural ability allowed him to capitalize on that natural ability then to become really an outstanding marketing analyst and business analyst and a consultant.
I see. That is absolutely fascinating. And it kind of leads me into my next question. And that would be, you know, Drucker has had such a huge, you know, influence on so many leaders and influencers and managers throughout the years. But as someone who has worked so close with him, if you could narrow it down to three, what would be your top Drucker advices?
My top Drucker advices. Well, I can knock off the first two right away. I mean, he taught us to think more than that. I think the basic thing of anything is sort of think, and then not just to think, but to act. But more than that, though, he taught us in general, you know, and I was most amazed in this in the class, and it also had to do with the consulting aspect, is he was asking the class one day when I was his doctoral student, how are you able to go to so many different industries and nonprofit and profit and governmental and so forth? And where do you get all this amazing experience and knowledge to actually consult in so many different areas? And Drucker said that I don't bring my knowledge and experience to any particular consulting situation. I bring my ignorance. And that was just an astounding statement, I think. Here, this very world famous, you know, the father of modern management, making a statement such as this. And it took me probably the next 40 years to figure out what he was talking about, although I finally did. But that's a lesson. We come to any situation with our ignorance, not just with our management, with our experience and our know-how or whatever, but with our ignorance. And you have to have some kind of a methodology in order to do that. So I would say number one probably is to think and act. Maybe I'll combine those two. Number two probably would be your ignorance. And the third thing, and he said this in a way that we have to start in everything. And the statement was, decide what business you are in. And I redefine that to say what you are supposed to be doing. I mean, we're not all in business. Some of us are working in nonprofits, or some of us may be in the military, or some of us may be doing 5 or 10,000 other different things, acting or dancing or gosh only know what, or interviewing some writer. but you know, we have to decide what business we are in, and we begin there, and that decides everything else. Because if we don't do that, we can fritter away our efforts and our time in doing 10,000 other different things which may feel good or may be okay, and maybe we can maybe justify with a little difficulty that, well, it fits into the job, but does it have to do with that central issue that we are engaged in, what business we are in? So I would say those are the three.
Right. And going forward, I mean, you have had such an amazing and illustrious career, and you're still absolutely going, and it's fascinating to me. So how have you yourself changed, and how has the business that you've been in changed from, you know, Drucker's learning? How has it impacted you personally?
Well, first, the impact you mentioned in the introduction, really, because I realized right away that what the concepts this great genius had thought were applicable not only to certain things, but applicable to everything. And we have to know how to apply them. Now, right now, the business I'm in, you know, I'm president of the California Institute of Advanced Management, and we were started 4 years ago with a mission, by the way, of teaching, offering Drucker an MBA almost entirely to Drucker's teachings, and to offer it at an affordable cost, because MBAs are very, very expensive, but they can be very valuable. And so we started 4 years ago, and we've had, because of the people that I was able to gather with me and because of the support that I've had by our founder, and we are a nonprofit, we were able to start this school and to not only to teach Drucker's concepts, but also to apply them. And that's what we've really done. In fact, we've developed something that I call IATEP, which is IATEP, which stands for Immediately Applied Theory for Enhanced Performance. And it brings a lot of things together, and I won't talk about it in great detail, but it has to do with a Drucker concept and one that was really very, very real to me, that the best way of learning anything is to teach it. Now, that's somewhat familiar. They've started something recently, which is apparently recently, called, you know, the flipped classroom, whereby it was thought up about 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, but actually it's more than 100 years old. It was really thought up by a superintendent of West Point, where I had the honor to graduate, barely, but still graduate, a number of years ago. And that was an individual by the name of Colonel Sylvanus Thayer. And he realized that the same thing that Drucker came out with, that the best way to learn anything is to teach it. And so the methodology at West Point that he established 200 years ago, I mean, he established it in 1835, it's still being used, was that you got the assignment ahead of time, and then you came to class, and then the instructor answered any questions you had and immediately evaluated you. And that was startling. But we were able to go through, for example, my first class at West Point in mathematics. It was explained to us that in the next 3 months, we would go through, and there were about 6 or 7 different textbooks there. There was algebra. I mean, these were just all just in one course in mathematics. Algebra, trigonometry, spherical trigonometry, plane geometry, solid geometry, spherical, all of these different calculus, integral, differential. I mean, unbelievable. We had about 5 or 6 textbooks there, and it says you will, in the next 5 or 6 months, go through every single problem, every single page, and be examined on that. And we looked around, you know, and none of us thought this guy must be smoking something. You know, that was impossible. But I want to assure you, Carol, that that's exactly what happened. We went through all these textbooks, and portions of the next course and the following semester was in the spring semester was in a calculus, portions of that textbook as well. And those methods are still being used. So what we did here at California Institute of Advanced Management was to combine all of them, or CIM as we call it, and so that our students get the assignments at home. The professors do not lecture for long hours. They are allowed only to lecture at a 4-hour block, 1 hour. And then they have to go into applying IATIP, which means that they have an experiential learning exercise that the students participate in. And then further yet, we do, and this is where consulting really came into it, because our students do real consulting for real businesses and nonprofits, small business as well as major corporations, and now worldwide, but we've done it through, we pioneered distance consulting as well in every single course they take. So whether it's a course in marketing or a course in leadership or a course in general management or a course in accounting or finance, it doesn't make any difference. They do consulting in that area in every single course. They do it in teams of 4, by the way, and then they at the end they do one solo. And the success we've had by doing that have been just remarkable. And again, I credit the folks that are doing this stuff on the line. I mean, I teach one course a year. Professors obviously teach a couple of courses, and the administrators we have are just superior. And they're implementers, as I am, of Drucker's concepts. But that's the power of what Drucker taught and how effective it can be and how amazing it can be used by everyone in almost anything. So I think that's the best lesson I can possibly show you about how it changed my life and how it's changing we think it's changing education. We feel that we're on the cutting edge of this thing.
Absolutely. And I think that it's amazing that, you know, students are going out there and they're experiencing the real world. And I think that that is something that perhaps education has not been focusing on for a very long time, at least in my personal experience back at university. I think that it was something that it was definitely lacking. And it is, in my opinion, absolutely the right way to approach the problem.
Peter was definitely on, he was an application guy. In other words, yes, the theory was fine, but how do you apply it? And yes. In fact, he had a famous saying that he would say when he gives seminars. He'd say, don't tell me that you enjoyed my seminar or workshop over the last day or last several days. Tell me, what are you going to do differently Monday morning? He was very much on application, and so we are also. In fact, we don't have tests. We grade performance. We grade management performance. We grade leadership. We grade teamwork. We grade papers. We have a lot of papers. And we grade presentations, because that's the other thing. Students have to present, actually present both ad hoc and plan in almost every class they attend. Every course, certainly. But in every class issue, they also come to the room, and the professor will give them a topic and say, talk what had something to do with the lesson, and say, give us 2 minutes on such and such. And then you have to make, or you have to present presentation and defend his position.
I see. Fascinating. And as we're talking about kind of education and the principles behind it, how would you say that Drucker's methods can be useful in the daily life for ordinary people? You know, perhaps people who are not into consulting, or, you know, they're not leaders and managers yet, but could his lessons inspire them and just teach them to improve their everyday life?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And I think I'm probably as good example as any. I mean, I want to tell you, by the way, that I was not a particularly great student when I was an undergraduate. In fact, a fact is, and I you know, we have a general that may be familiar, you know, where you are in the UK, but by the name of George Armstrong Custer. And he was a, he did pretty well, actually, during the American Civil War. But in his last battle, he was totally defeated by the Indians at the Battle of Little Bighorn. But Custer graduated from West Point with the lowest math average that you can imagine. Now, part of it was due to the fact that his class was split up because a number of people resigned to go south and fought in the opposite side in the Confederate armies, which opposed the Union during the Civil War. But I have to tell you, the truth is that when I graduated, I had the lowest math average since George Armstrong Custer graduated in the class of June of 1861, was still getting through the place. And that's a fact. And so you can see, I can definitely consider myself an ordinary person. And yet what helped me tremendously was being able to apply these things. So I consider, when you say, how can you be used in daily life for ordinary people? Why? I consider myself certainly one of these ordinary people who did do these things. Now, but that's the key, is you really have to apply the concepts. I mean, the concepts are known. They're written. I mean, they're written in my book, or they're written in Drucker's book, or they're there, or he's taught them when he was alive. But you have to actually apply them. And that's the challenge for us, is how we can take these concepts and apply them in our daily lives. Now, if we can do that, if we can do this, which we can, then success is just our guarantee.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feeds perfectly into my next question, actually, is, so I think it's no secret, and I don't think that it's a stretch to say that managers and leaders can sometimes be reluctant to change, reluctant to, you know, innovation, technology, whatever it may be. Do you think that there's some kind of, mental preparation or fortitude that it takes to take on board Drucker's methodology and his teachings in order to generate success?
Well, I there's nothing particularly frightening about them. I mean, you know, assuming Drucker's method, sometimes he says things that are really different, and you really have to think about them. And I'll just give you a couple of those. For example, that one of the thing that I heard him say the most verbally, which I don't think I ever saw in any of his books or any of his writings, was he said that what everybody knows is usually wrong. What everyone knows is usually wrong. And I think about that, and when I started writing about it, I wrote a book. My first book on Drucker was called A Class with Drucker, which is really reminiscences of my being a student. But that that saying I started examining was unbelievably true. I mean, just so many things that people just assume is factual is just not the truth.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking of Sherlock Holmes right now, that, you know, and in Sherlock Holmes, there's a very famous saying that that everyone knows or knew that, you know, he said to Dr. Watson, his assistant, and that saying was, "Elementary, my dear Watson." Yes. Well, it turned out that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle never, ever, ever had Sherlock Holmes say that in any of his books or any of his stories or anything else. But everybody knows that that's what he said. And it turns out if you really examine it, it didn't come from any of the books or from the author or from that he had Sherlock Holmes speak. But rather, this came from the actor. His name escapes me right now. He, in the movies that he made in the late 30s and 40s, that was written to all the movies. And so much of that was shown that during the movie, he would say, you know, "Elementary, my dear Watson." But Sherlock Holmes, this was never written to anything that Doyle wrote about, ever. So, but everybody knew that. So there are just a lot of things from the earth being round and not flat, I guess, and saying, oh, no, that everyone knew at one point a certain number of elements in the Mendel's table. Turns out that there wasn't, they were fixed by a certain number. As I recall from my high school chemistry, I think it was 19. If you said anything else and you got an F, and it turns out that no, there are more elements than that. So there's just so many things in life that are just incorrect. They're just not right. And so what you have to do to apply, getting back to your question asked, you really have to recall that, remember that you are in charge. And so if you, it is difficult to change. I know, I find myself, if a major change in my, in anything is I tend to resist it at first. And so I have to get hold of myself and remember that, hey, I'm the guy in charge, so let's give it a shot, see what happens. And I tell my guys that a lot is, somebody will come up and someone will have an unusual idea and they'll say, well, no one's ever done that before. And I always say, good, that will be the first step. But it takes, something to remember that we are in charge and we make that decision. So even if it is very different, many, many, many times, it says, well, let's give it a shot and see whether it be so or not. Right. So nothing special, but I think anybody can do that, and really that's the only mental preparation I can imagine right now.
I see. And going back to consulting, how do you think that the profession is currently developing, and where do you think it will end up in, let's say, 5 or 10 years from now?
Well, we're kind of a paradox at CIM in that, although we use consulting to teach theory, to teach application of theory, and many of our students do go into consulting. In fact, we consulted for a well-known consulting group. We do these real consulting, and they were so impressed with the quality of our students. They wanted to hire our students. Now, our students do these free, these consulting projects, and we do them, like I said, we've started doing all over the world. But we do them at no cost, and they actually wanted to hire students. I thought, well, you can't do that. But if you're really interested in this, I will talk to those that are graduating, and when they are graduated, if you want to, they wanted to hire them as adjunct consultants to do it in a distance consulting. I said, you can hire, make your own deal with them. We'll just provide the service of the connection. We don't want any money from it. The consulting profession, we're not really, although we train our professors and consultants, and I have an advisor who has a JD from Harvard, and he works really as a volunteer, has worked for many years as a volunteer, but he has a JD from Harvard, and he worked for McKinsey & Company, which is the largest consulting firm in the world. And he acted as my advisor. But we don't, having said all that, we're not, the purpose of our institution is not to teach even Drucker consulting. We use Drucker consulting. Now, having said that, I think that we have to keep in mind that Drucker, although he was known as probably the greatest, not only the father of modern management, maybe the father of modern consulting, but yet, he operated as an independent consultant. He did not have a fancy office, for example. And as pointed out in one of his biographers, he could have started, the Drucker Group or something like that. He never did that. if you call, when Drucker was alive, you got his phone number, you called, and he answered his own phone. He had no secretary. And that's how he operated in all cases. He didn't have a fancy office or anything. And so I think that more independent consultants will realize that there is more than one way to go if they wish to be independent. That they don't have to do, they don't have to have a fancy office with the wooden panel or anything like that, and they don't have to have a secretary or someone or someone in between that talks and sets up their appointments or whatever. That they can actually do this. I mean, and Drucker really, among his other things, provided that leadership. So if I would say in any way, this is probably the way that he, the direction of at least independent consulting, is more folks are going to realize that and try to emulate Drucker, and which would be a good idea, I believe, and way to proceed.
I see. I absolutely agree with you. I think that, before we move on, do you think that because of the way that he conducted his business, kind of answering his own phone, not focusing on kind of fancy offices and all of these other extras, do you think that perhaps that gave him a sense of, originality or innovation at the time, and what drew a lot of people to him, perhaps?
I don't know whether it drew people to him or not, but it sure certainly shocked them. I mean, you'd call up his number, and he had a very strong Viennese accent, and this person would come and say, "Peter Drucker," it's just, it really blew him away in a lot of cases. So certainly, got their attention. I don't think it was I don't believe it was a marketing technique. That was just how he. It was how he operated. He was a very individual, but I think that if you're going to do independent consulting, it's one person. It's an interesting way to start, to start doing it.
I see. Okay, and
requires a lot less investment anyway.
Absolutely, and this leads us to our last question, actually. And it's the one that I ask all of the guests here on the podcast. And it is, what are you currently reading?
Well, the easy answer is Drucker, because I'm so doggone busy, I can barely read anything else. I mean, I'm reminded that Doris Drucker told me once, because she was asked the question also, what did Peter read? Did he read all the management books? And she said, well, he did scan them. I have a stack of books by my bedside. It's very difficult for me to get through them. So to single out one particular book, I really couldn't answer. I tend to get three or four books at one time. And if I get a topic in particular of some interest, then I'll spend some more additional time with it. But I'm reading, I read a lot of Drucker, and I have other books on calling it. If there is something that comes up in management and something catches on, like the flipped classroom that we talked about earlier is a good example, I got a query about that. I never heard of it before. And so first thing I did is Google it and found out the history. And that's when I found out that someone actually defined it as the Thayer method. Well, I thought Thayer method. Well, I don't know anything about flipped classroom, but I sure know who Sylvanus Thayer is. And so I found out further that, yeah, it actually, this was essentially the same thing that he did 200 years ago. Instead of having the professors actually lecture their way and the students just, parrot back, whatever. And instead that, they would be the guide. They would define what they expected the student to learn ahead of time. And then they would make sure the student understood it. And then they would evaluate and get them involved right away. My reading is I couldn't define it and say, well, I'm working on this book or that book. I'm reading kind of a Drucker-like. I'm reading a number of books at one time.
Okay, I see. Well, with that, I would like to thank you very much for taking the time, early in the morning over there in California to join us.
Really, Thank you.
to Jonas Bill. And of course, for our audience, if you would like to know more about LID and the upcoming book, you can always visit us at www.lidpublishing.com and on all social media platforms at LID Publishing. And if you would like to know more about Bill and the California Institute of Advanced Management, you can visit them at www.ciam.edu. Over there, you can find all the relevant information about courses, about Bill himself, and all the amazing work that the Institute does. So, once again, thank you very much, Bill, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Miro.
And thank you again to our lovely listeners and audience for tuning in again with us. We look forward to seeing you next time on LID Radio.